We are joined now by Ian Tullock, writer for the Leafs Nation, The Athletic, and the host of the Leafs Geeks podcast, a podcast that I appeared on earlier this year, a couple months back. And Ian, if I remember correctly, we did talk about who would you rather the Maple Leafs face, Tampa Bay or Boston? And this was right after the trade deadline. And I said Tampa Bay based on the depth. And who knows, we'll never know unless the Maple Leafs are able to get through this round what it would be like to face Tampa Bay in the first round. We'll never know anyways. But I said before the series, predicted Bruins in six. I said maybe there was an opportunity here for Boston to really cave in the Maple Leafs in this series. I was definitely not expecting this type of effort from Toronto, though. I thought it would be a little bit closer. But what kind of positives have you taken away from the first couple of games, if any?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rob. And it's been tricky trying to find some positives in these first few games. I know in the first game, it was pretty much an unmitigated disaster. The Kadri suspension didn't help matters at all. And then in the last game, they gave up four goals on the first six shots, and the game was basically over 10 minutes in. So it was really tricky trying to watch last night's game. I know the Leafs tried to claw their way back into it. You had a good game from Gardner, Dermott, Austin Matthews are generating chances, but I mean, when you give up four goals that early in a game, you're not going to have much of a chance at coming back. I think the one positive you can take out of it is that the power play has looked good. They haven't converted yet, but I have to think if the Leafs can generate a couple power plays at home in these next two games, the Marner unit has looked good all season long, so you got to hope that they can convert. I don't think people realize how close the last game was outside of those first few shots, because obviously they went in, obviously they scored on their first three shots. They scored four out of their first six. But the shots and the chances were actually pretty even. It was just one of those games where the save percentage was abysmal and the Leafs lost the game really in the first period. But I think the first game, you can definitely look at that and say that the Leafs got dominated in pretty much every aspect of the game. I don't think the second game was as bad as the scoreboard indicated. Obviously, Pastrnak had, what, 5 points in that game. It was pretty ridiculous. But I do think that there's a little bit of hope. I think that Travis Dermott has played excellent, and if you can get him some more minutes, I think he's been very good when he's been on the ice. It really comes down to the save percentage, because they've had an 80% save percentage in these first two games. That's just not going to get it done in the playoffs. It needs to be better. Whether or not that was a product of luck in those first couple goals, they weren't very good. If you think you're going to get those saves in the next game, maybe it'll be a bit closer, but it's been hard trying to take positives out of the game when the shooting percentage is so strongly in Boston's favor. But I do think that game two was a lot closer than most people think. I know people tend to be calling out Austin Matthews after his game. I thought he played really well.
Yeah.
People are calling out Mike Babcock after game two. I thought he coached a pretty decent game in game two. I thought game one, there were a few very questionable decisions he made, but last game really was over in the first 10 minutes, and there's not much to take out of it after that. You just have to hope that game three goes a lot better than that.
Well, this is clearly going to be the swing game. Either Boston's going to go up 3-0 and then really be able to put it away with a bunch of games still left remaining at home, or the Maple Leafs win a game and it's 2-1 with another home game and maybe they can get it back to even. It's still in Boston's favor just based on the fact they have two wins already and still have two more home games coming up. So the odds are definitely not in the Maple Leafs' favor. Doesn't help that Nazem Kadri's not playing. We'll see about Leo Komarov. He's going to be reevaluated at this point after leaving last night's game with a lower body injury. And look, for me, Ian, I think the biggest concern right now is just some of the defensive play. And Ron Hainsey really has not been good for the last half of the season. It's been a struggle, and I wonder how much of that is because he's gassed, because let's face it, he's a 37-year-old guy. He's played a lot of hockey over the last 12 months. People forget, or maybe they don't, he was part of that Stanley Cup run with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So he played a lot of playoff games last year, did not have much of an off season, and then he's back at it with the Maple Leafs, and here he is into the playoffs. So he's a guy that Mike Babcock has leaned on so heavily this year in the penalty kill, especially for a large part of the season. He was out there pretty much every penalty, killing all of them. So he has a lot of miles on the tires this year and throughout his career, and has not looked good right now. Morgan Rielly's been a bit of a disaster the first couple of games. Nikita Zaitsev had a rough go last night. So for me anyways, I think I'm expecting to see some changes tomorrow on the blue line. What about you?
I think that would be a welcome change. I like Ron Hainsey, the player. I think that he's been playing way over his head. I know we talk about the penalty kill and how he plays the full 2 minutes. Frankly, I think that's ridiculous. There's really no defenseman in the NHL who gets that usage. Even Zdeno Chara does come off the ice every so often on the Bruins penalty kill. Hainsey's out there for the full 2 minutes often. And in those last 30 seconds on the penalty kill, he's out of gas. He can't do much. you'd much rather see someone like Travis Dermott on the ice trying to kill a penalty with a lot of rest as opposed to Ron Hainsey, who's completely gassed towards the end of the penalty kill. But I think at 5-on-5, what's flown under the radar is just how difficult Hainsey's minutes have been this year. If you look at quality of competition, he's in like the 99th percentile of quality of competition he's faced this year. He's been basically used as a number one defenseman at even strength.
Right.
Gets all of the penalty kill time. Obviously isn't used on the power play, but for a guy who's 37 years old to be used like that, I mean, naturally, he's slowed down as the season went on. He looked very good in October and November. December, he looked a bit shaky. And honestly, since the new year, he's been pretty bad. And I say this as someone who's a fan of Ron Hainsey and understands what he brings to the game defensively, but he just looks gassed at this point. I don't think he can handle top competition. And using Riley and him against the Bergeron line just isn't working. And I find it funny that Morgan Riley tends to get a bit of a free pass in Toronto, whereas we tend to get mad at Jake Gardner every time he does something wrong. I find them to be very similar players who are magnificent with the puck, but tend to struggle in their own end. And we're just being honest, Hainsey and Riley have been terrible against that top line. And I get that the Bergeron, Pastrnak, Marchand line, they dominate everyone they face. They dominate the best players in the world. That's just what they do. They're an amazing line. But I think you need to start trying to throw Gardner out them against that top line more often. Personally, I would love to see Riley and Dermott to see if maybe they could get something going. Maybe they wouldn't be the best defensively, but they can move the puck out of the zone with possession. And what I find is that Ron Hainsey gets the puck on his stick and he whips it off the glass. He whips it off the boards. It's a turnover to the opposition, and then they just come back in the zone with control. You end up playing the defensive zone more than the offensive zone. Maybe if you get Travis Dermott more minutes, he'll be able to spend more of the time in the offensive zone with the puck, creating offense. I say the best defense is a good offense. If you're in the offensive zone with puck possession, it's really hard to give up a goal. So I'd love to see someone like Travis Dermott get a bit more usage as the season goes on, but I mean, this season might only have two more games left in it, so I'd really love to see his ice time go up because he's been the number six defenseman for the past few months, and I would personally argue that he might have been their best defenseman over this past month or two. I love Travis Dermott. I think he gets the puck going in the right direction. I think he's very underrated defensively. The way that he takes away space and transition, he is just a magnificent skater who helps tilt the ice in his team's favor. I'd love to see him get more minutes. Not sure if it happens, but that would be the change that I look to in this next game.
Yeah, I wonder if he is a guy that gets more opportunities the rest of the series just because he's got fresh legs, he's looked good, and he seems to be capable to give this team a lot more minutes than he has so far in the first couple of games. But it's a Mike Babcock thing, Ian, we know it. He trusts his veterans. He's going to ride or die with a lot of these guys, whether it's Leo Komarov when he's healthy, whether it's Roman Polak, whether it's Ron Hainsey. So I find it difficult to see that happening, but you never know. Desperate times call for desperate measures, so maybe Mike Babcock will make that move tomorrow. Ian Tulloch, writer for the Leafs Nation and The Athletic, joining us here on Sportsnet today. I'm Rob Wong here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And look, the blue line has definitely been an issue, Ian, but I would say just the team defense as a whole, I wouldn't say I'm terribly surprised that the Maple Leafs are definitely giving up some decent opportunities. You talked about that Bergeron line and how good they've been this year, and I'm going to pump my tires a little bit here for a second, but the Sportsnet fantasy hockey pool that we have at work here, I stacked that Boston first line because, you know, looking at some of the defensive metrics, whether it's expected goals per 60 or whatever, the Maple Leafs are, you know, near the bottom of the league. They give up a lot of opportunities, and as far as the teams that have made the playoffs, they arguably have the worst team defense. So, you know, the Boston getting all these opportunities isn't terribly surprising. Now, are they better than this? Of course. We've seen it for large stretches this year. You don't win this many games without playing at least somewhat decent defense, but you know, you talked about the goaltending. That has been an issue so far this series. Frederik Andersen hasn't necessarily looked like the guy we saw earlier this year where he was on an incredible hot streak. Now, I don't think we were expecting him to keep it up all season long, but we know he's not this bad either. That's the thing.
And with save percentage, it's so volatile game to game. You'll see great goalies have bad seasons. It's just the way it happens sometimes. So in a one-game sample, anything can happen. I mean, Ben Scrivens had a 59 save shutout not too long ago. We saw Curtis McElhinney with a 40-plus save shutout. Anything can happen in hockey, and that means that good goalies can have bad games too. And we saw it in that last game. The first three shots went in on Frederik Andersen, and he was pulled. That's just the way it goes sometimes. One interesting thing when you look at his save percentage is that it has tailed off towards the end of the year. His save percentage in March was below 900, and in April so far, especially when you include the playoffs, it hasn't been too great. Will that continue? It's very tough to say, because with goaltenders, the running joke is that goaltenders are voodoo, and it's very hard to predict moving forward. I mean, we saw Yaroslav Halak stunned the Washington Capitals not too long ago and helped Montreal get past them. So you never know. Maybe Frederik Andersen, his next four or five games, he looks excellent and he helps Toronto pull off the upset. So I don't want to get too down on a goaltender for one bad game because we've seen them turn it around so often. But you're definitely right that if he keeps playing the way that he's played in these last two games, the Leafs are going to get swept. You need to get better goaltending than that. I'm pretty confident that he's been a top 10 goalie in the NHL over the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm confident that he'll bounce back. I'm not sure if he has a great game in the following game. It's very tough to say. But I don't think it's any more or less likely than Tuukka Rask having a bad game. So, again, small samples, one game, anything can happen. I think we're going to see a much closer game upcoming on Monday, tomorrow. And I think with the last change, I'm very interested to see what Mike Babcock does. Because, like you said, Toronto does have teams that are remaining in the playoffs right now. But I would argue that they might have the best offense outside of maybe Winnipeg because they're second in the league in goals. If you give them last change and you can put Austin Matthews and William Nylander in a good position, if you can get JVR and Tyler Bozak, the offensive zone starts that they need to succeed, you can get a lot of goals. And we've seen the power play be dominant at times this year. If they can start clicking, I wouldn't be surprised to see Toronto put up a lot of goals in game 3 and 4. So this series is far from over. It's definitely in Boston's favor. But I do think there's a chance that the Leafs can come back. It's obviously not a high chance. You obviously bet on the team that has a 2-0 lead in the series. But crazier things have happened. We've seen teams come back from 3-0 in a series. We've seen Boston lose a series that they were up 3-0 from. So it's not impossible, but it's definitely looking unlikely. But a win in Game 3 would go a long way.
It definitely would. And you know, I said this before the series, even though I predicted Bruins in 6 as well, but if the Maple Leafs play at their top level, if they bring their A game, they can play with anybody. So we just haven't seen that so far in the first couple of games. It doesn't help that Nazem Kadri is going to be out for the next two games either due to suspension. But I'm curious what you think might happen up front. And we saw Mike Babcock try to use Leo Komarov there on the top line yesterday, Ian, before abandoning it after the first period. Andreas Johnsson got in the lineup, and we know how good he's been in the second half of the season. Are you expecting Zach Hyman, William Nylander, Austin Matthews to be reunited? Does maybe Andreas Johnsson get a shot somewhere in the top six? Kasperi Kapanen, what kind of moves do you think Mike Babcock might have up his sleeve heading into game number 3?
It'll definitely be interesting to see because earlier in the game, the lines weren't looking too great. And then when he made the changes to the lineup, it looked pretty good. I'm trying to remember the lines that he had going. He had Patrick Marleau on a line with Matthews, and who else was on that wing?
I'm
trying to remember.
I don't remember.
He did have, and then the second line, he had Hyman with Marner and Nylander. So it was an interesting line. Kapanen he had up with Austin Matthews. Sorry for forgetting that. So the top six was interesting in the last game. They seemed to be playing with more speed, with more control. Mitch Marner on a line with Zach Hyman I found pretty interesting, but they were getting things done. They scored the big goal to help try to get the Leafs to come back. I'm interested to see what happens because he can control the last change. And what that means is he can stack a line or two and he can really shelter a fourth line if he needs to. I sense that he's going to only give Tyler Bozak and JVR offensive zone starts. I doubt that they're going to get a defensive zone start in the next game, but I'll be really interested to see what he does because he has last change in these next two games. So it'll be really interesting to see the strategy that he tries to use because it's going to make a big difference when you're coach and you have the last change. It can really swing the impact of a game depending on if you get the matchups you want. I have to think that he's not going to let the bottom six against the Bergeron line like he did last time. I know he said that, you know, in a defensive zone situation that you can trust the Plekanec line to get the puck out. But like we saw in game one, that's not a good bet to make against the best line in the NHL. So I have to think that he's going to hard match the Bergeron line with either the second line with Mitch Marner or he'll just go strength on strength and try to get the Matthews line rolling against them. It'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure what he's going to do, but I do know that he is going to get the matchups that he wants, considering he has last change. It'll just be interesting to see what matchups he wants, considering that the series hasn't gone the way he wants it to so far. So definitely an interesting game 3 we have ahead of ourselves tomorrow.
Yeah, I definitely found that interesting, him talking about the fourth line, and their job is to win the faceoff, get it out, and then get off the ice. And it's like, Well, you know, face-offs, some guys sure are better than others, and I think Thomas Plekanec this year has won somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 53% of face-offs. We know how good Bergeron is, so essentially it's going to be a 50-50. It's going to be a coin flip. So what happens when they don't get the face-off win? Then they're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I want to touch on this Bergeron line, and I'm going to keep pushing this until I get everybody on my side. But I said this yesterday on Twitter, and I did have a fellow coworker come at me a bit, say it was a bit of a hot take. I won't name that person and go at them on the air. But I said, for me, in the 20 plus years that I've been watching hockey, Ian, that this Bergeron line, for me anyways, might be the best line that I've ever seen. They play at an elite level on offense. They play at an elite level on defense. They've got three legit, you know, superstars on this line, and they play against the toughest competition every night. And for them to have the success, put up the points, have the defensive metrics and numbers that they do, I can't really think of another line. And we can think of, you know, duos, whether it's the Sedins, or you think of Crosby and Kunitz, or some other, you know, duos where it's two guys and maybe another guy that, you know, fills in on the line but doesn't exactly drive the play or have the same type of, you know, success as the other two guys. Maybe the only other line I can think of that a friend of mine brought up was Jonathan Toews with Marian Hossa and, you know, Brandon Sutter or Patrick Sharp. Those guys were pretty good too as a group. But these three guys, I really have trouble thinking of another trio that has this type of talent that do what they do. Can you think of anybody?
And it's tough because the Sedins got a lot of offensive zone usage, and as they should, because they're dynamic in the offensive zone. They get a cycle going and you can't stop it. I think the best comparable I can come up with is when Datsyuk and Zetterberg played together, because they play that similar style of game to Marchand and Bergeron. They're just incredible 200-foot players, so much skill, so defensively responsible. They own the puck. If the other team gets the puck in the offensive zone, they tend not to generate too much. And then once you get the puck back, you're going to generate tons of chances offensively. They tended to play with Holmstrom sometimes. Sometimes they would play with Johan Franzen. That might be the best comparable I have. But like you said, not only is it a phenomenal defensive line that can shut down the opposition, but they have 330 goal scorers on that line. I think a couple of them would have been on pace for 40 over the course of a full season. David Pastrnak, like we saw last night, just a phenomenal young player. Same draft as Nylander, should not have gone in the mid-20s like he did. Like, that's looking like a big mistake by a lot of teams. So it's really hard trying to think of a line as dominant in a 200-foot sense. We've seen lines put up lots of points, but the way that the Bergeron line just controls the game, you really have to game plan against it. And you need to make sure that you don't have one of your bottom six lines on the ice against them, because they're going to exploit you. So it's an interesting series when it comes to that, because we haven't really seen a team face a line this good when it comes to Toronto. I mean, we saw them face Bergeron and Marchand in 2013, and the Leafs were obviously a much weaker team back then. But adding Pastrnak to that line just gives them more offensive punch. He's a great shooter, helps you spread the ice offensively. I know that we're Leafs on the radio. We're talking about the Leafs, and we're just praising the Bruins, and it sucks. We don't like doing this. We want to say that it's not that great of a line, and Toronto obviously has a chance. It's a great line. There's not much else to it. The second, third, and fourth lines are where you have to look to exploit Boston. You have to try to exploit Adam McQuaid on that side of the ice. You have to try to exploit Zdeno Chara's lack of foot speed. There are definitely places where you can beat Boston. But let's just face it, that Bergeron line is going to be a strength for theirs. They're going to win that matchup. And if you're going to beat Boston, you have to beat them in other areas, because that's one of the best lines we've seen, like you said, in the past 20 years. You're just not going to beat them mano a mano.
Yeah, and this is difficult for me, Ian, because I predicted Bruins in six, but a Maple Leafs victory, Maple Leafs long run is good for business. It's good for this radio station. It's good for Sportsnet. It's good for you because you get to keep talking about the Leafs. So there's a lot of benefits if the Leafs can pull this off, but it's either, you know, I look bad because I made a bad prediction, or we can continue talking about something that's fun. Hopefully we get a good game tomorrow, game number three between the Maple Leafs and Bruins down at the Air Canada Center. We appreciate the time, and hopefully we're talking again while the series is still going on, and it's not over before next weekend.
Fingers crossed. I'll be looking forward to talking about Game 7 with you next week, Rob.